Hey y'all, I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 389. And whoo, let me just tell y'all, I got some fires burning in y'all's souls last week telling y'all about my dermatology experience.
Mm-hmm.
People were like, we ride at midnight.
Well, and they knew you would be asleep at that time.
I know. But I mean, I'd be down though.
I just picture them carrying you like on Aladdin when they have him on his shoulders.
Because they know I'm sleeping.
But yeah, but you're like asleep with your
CPAP
on and stuff.
God, why was that so annoying just then finishing all your sentences?
Oh, is that something new?
That was really annoying. I'm sorry.
I'm glad that everyone came to your defense because that's so true though. Like, she has no place to tell you all of that.
Yeah.
And to make you feel that way. And just like bedside manner and shit.
Right.
I don't know where I was watching this. I think it was a TikTok, but someone said their professor at med school, someone had asked, like, what if we don't want to help like an LGBT community? And they were like, get another job.
Right.
Like, don't go into this field then.
Right.
And so that just kind of goes along with like the bedside manner and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might not like my size and my like life choices, but you're here to help me with my skin.
Right. Well, it's not like this is a fucking bakery. Like, you took an oath to treat everyone the same.
Yeah.
Donna and I had such a fun weekend, though. What did we do? Oh, Saturday, me, Donna, Tiffany, and Donna's coworker, Andrea, went to see Freakiest Friday. Y'all, that movie was so good.
Okay, I thought it was Freakier Friday.
Oh, I thought it was Freakiest. Maybe there's going to be a third one.
Oh, maybe. Why was I Winnie the Pooh? No, I was Tigger.
But it was so good. Jamie Lee Curtis was phenomenal.
She looked so good, too.
But, like, it was just, I mean, I laughed mm-hmm. out loud.
Also, because we are on the side of things where we are Jamie Lee Curtis and, you know, that age group. Well, it's different because we're not on Lindsay Lohan's age group anymore. Well, now we are because she grew up with us, but
I was going to say, she is our age.
But you know what I mean? Like, we were the kid. Now, I feel like I relate more to the adult.
I agree with you that we were more Jamie Lee Curtis's character, but we are supposed to be more like Lindsay Lohan's character.
I know. Well, that's true.
But it was really good. I laughed out loud. I mean, again, it is the movie is what it is. Like, you don't expect to go in and it be like some amazing blockbuster. Like, if you like the first one, you'll like the second one.
Right, yeah. And I feel like it had a lot of hype to live up to, and it did.
Yeah. And I think it had, like, the perfect amount of nostalgia in it, like, versus, like, Happy Gilmore 2. Like, while I really liked that movie, it was so much about the first movie, whereas this one had components of it that was, like, I loved the nods, and it was really funny, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then Donna dropped me off at home, and I called her back, and I was like, I've really been on a TikTok rabbit hole. What?
You have not. You did not call me back.
I call.
You text me.
What'd I say?
You said, what Marios do you have?
Yeah, because here's the thing. I have been on a TikTok rabbit hole of watching people play Mario, like Super Nintendo Mario, old school Nintendo Mario, Mario World 3, you know, all the things. And I was like, what Marios do you have?
She said, I'm in a Mario mood and Colby's not. He sucks. And I was like, well, I called you and was like, do you want me to pick you up? Like, what are you saying? Because this is Carrie. She'll just say that statement. And I'm like, do you want me to invite you to my house or no?
I was inviting myself. I said, what Marios do you have? Because so I'm like, coming.
What do you want me to do with that statement? Like, you know, and I'm like, well, I'm still out here because I had to get gas. So you want me to come back? She's like, oh, yeah.
Well, because I was fully expecting to have to drive out there, but she was like right there. So I was like, I sure do want you to come swing by and pick your girl up. And then did Colby come and pick me up? He sure did. I was like a princess.
Oh, Lord. Princess Peach.
Now you know I'm a Daisy girl.
I know you're a Daisy. I'm Daisy. God. Grates on my fucking nerves.
So my sister, who has the two little kids, like 10 and 8, they have been playing some of the old school Marios and stuff. And just like, you know, kind of how we did. and Cole was playing Mario Kart with Waluigi, and Allie, his little sister, goes, I like his boots. Like, she's so, like, just a little fashionista. She's the 8-year-old, you know. She's yes. like, I like his boots.
She really is a fashionista.
Oh, my gosh. This girl. My sister sent me a picture, and she was like, because she's always like, come get your niece. Because this girl had put on her makeup, and, like, I'm not joking when I say it's better than I can do.
Yeah.
She had a winged liner.
Yeah.
I was like, how in the hell?
But I will have to fight her for Waluigi, because, you know, I do like a tall man, and he has a rose.
I know. I told my sister that. I said, I like whenever you're playing, what is it, Mario Party, that he gives a rose. She's like, I don't think we have that. I'm like, girl, you would love that game. Uh-huh. It is a board game.
Uh-huh. So I have an update for y'all. If y'all went to the New Orleans show, which is so weird to say, like, we had a show. Anyway, but my sister talked about our sister who's deceased, and that she has her cremains, and that she would always turn on a TV in a room that, like, no one went there. Like, her dogs didn't go in there. She didn't go in there. The TV should have not turned on. And she had said that she was like, hey, Lori, if you keep doing this, you're going to have to go out in the garden kind of thing. Well, this weekend, I was talking to Carrie, and I don't remember what I had called her for, but it was just something quick. Hey, XYZ, like, ask her a question, and then hung up. Well, I meant to hang up, but I guess Carrie hung up faster than me because she hates talking on the phone. And when I hung up, it was all my favorites, and it hit my sister, Susan, and I heard someone talking, but, like, I was on the computer working, and so I was like, so I looked on my phone, and it was her. So I was like, hey, I didn't mean to call you. I'm so sorry. But, like, how you been?
Yeah.
What's going on? And she was like, see, that was God making you call me. Like, you needed to call me. But she had said that she had just thought about me because recently her, like, after she told that story, her TV has been going off again. And she said that she was like, Lori, I am not joking.
Yeah.
And she said, tell them that on the podcast. Like, it got me back. Also, you know how a dragonfly is my mom's symbol for me? Nope. Strike that, reverse it. Mm-hmm. My symbol of my
for
mom.
Her? Yeah.
The other day going to work, I was just like, not feeling amazing. I don't know. I've been drinking protein shakes in the morning. And I mean, Premier Protein, I love you, but also, sometimes it just makes my stomach hurt. Like, maybe they're too sweet or something. But I was like, oh, I don't feel good. Like, is today going to be a good day? And I saw a dragonfly. And I said, oh, okay, it's going to be a good day. About that time when I'm like, thanks, Mom. It got hit by a car.
That's so on brand.
Like, I saw the wing still on the thing. I was like, oh, you killed my mom.
Man, that's so freaking on brand. I don't know what's in retrograde, antegrade, posterior grade, foreplay. I don't fucking know. But
foreplay.
I don't know, but it needs to stop.
Yeah, it's been hell of a month. And August is supposed to be my month.
Well, welcome to 40. It's all downhill from here. Well, before we get into the episode, we have to talk about BetterHelp. Because this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Because y'all know, basically, the beginning of the episodes is us trauma dumping on y'all. Because, you know, you got to find it where you can find it, right?
Well, you know, I trauma dump on everyone.
Like, everywhere you go, they know your name. And they're like, oh, what? She's here. She comes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so much so that when my mom did pass away, the fast food people knew Carrie enough that, like, you were my friend. And was like, how's she doing? Here's a card for her.
Wait, I forgot about that.
Yes.
Well, sometimes you need a little more help than to just trauma dump on strangers. And that's where BetterHelp comes in. Because with BetterHelp, you can find the right match, not just some random person in a drive-thru to trauma dump on, but a licensed therapist who is trained to actually help you with the big stuff. Relationships, stress, anxiety, depression, all of it.
And BetterHelp has been helping people for over 10 years. They've got over 30,000 licensed therapists, and they've helped more than 5 million people find their match.
And what I love is their therapist match commitment. So you fill out a short questionnaire, and that's how they match you with somebody. But if it doesn't feel right, you can switch therapists at any time. No awkward breakup.
The thought of having to tell someone that I want to go somewhere else, that sends me into a panic mode. So that's one of my favorite things about BetterHelp, but also that it's flexible. You can meet from wherever, your couch, your car, hiding in the bathroom. It's all online. Plus, you can pause your subscription whenever you need to.
The difference between venting to your group chat and talking with a therapist is huge. One makes it for great memes, but the other one gives you actual tools to feel better and handle life.
So if you've been feeling stuck, overwhelmed, or just tired of turning strangers into your accidental therapist, this is your sign to try BetterHelp.
As one of the largest online therapy providers in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise.
Find the one with BetterHelp. Y'all can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/APC.
That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/APC.
Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode and for keeping us from trauma dumping on our baristas and everyone else. All right, y'all, picture it. Belleville, Illinois, 1991. Belleville is a small city outside of St. Louis, like 17 miles. Cindy Sorrow had lived in this small town for 2 years, and she was 34 years old, stay-at-home mom of two daughters, Brooke, who was 9 at the time, and Christy, who was 7. Now, she also had been with her longtime boyfriend, Glenn, for about 10 years. But I'm like, Glenn, I mean, to each their own, but 10 years, buddy, put a ring on it.
Was that what she wanted, though?
I know.
Some people are happy and content to never get married.
I know. But, whew. Okay. Now, he worked over at a chemical plant in St. Louis. And things were normal. They were living in a duplex. And even though they might not want to get married, they did want a future together. And they did want a place for their family to grow. And that meant finding a house. Something that they can own. Something that was their own. Originally, they were thinking about staying in Belleville just because it is close to his work, but they ended up deciding to look in Caseyville instead because that was closer to Cindy's mom, and Cindy's mom helped with the girls. So that trumps everything. Like, you can drive 10 more minutes if that means we're closer and she can, like, pick up the girls from school or, like, you know, whatever. Like, that's better than anything. But around the time that they started house hunting, Cindy started having a lot of stressful nightmares. And it was just one reoccurring one over and over. And she kept dreaming about a staircase. It was kind of like a nondescript staircase, but something was chasing her. And she never saw who it was, but she'd wake up with her heart pounding. And then the next night, same thing again. She's just lucky that she didn't go back to sleep and was on the stairs again. Could you imagine?
Right.
So she chalked that up to just being like, okay, I'm nervous about this investment. You know, it's a big move. But eventually they did find a house in Caseyville and it checked all the boxes. It wasn't only close to her mom, it was close to Glenn's mom and like, hop, skip, and jump through the woods like Little Red Riding Hood. God, that's so hard to say. Huh, tell me that wasn't my favorite story. I was probably like The Girl Who Wore Red. That was even still hard. Anyway, through the woods over to Glenn's grandmother's house.
We go.
Mm-hmm. And then a few minutes from Cindy's mom's apartment. So they had two, you know, emergency babysitters right there. They had two people that they knew they can count on for even more than their girls. Like, having your mom there, that's way better. But right off the bat, just weird shit was happening at the house. When they tried to move in, the house was full of wasps. Like, they couldn't even get in at first. Then, while they were just trying to walk around the property, like, oh, we're going to leave the door open. Like, hopefully they kind of come out. Like, just, okay, we're going to take this chance to just look at the yard we have now. You know, it's not in a duplex, all of that. That's when Cindy noticed there were a lot of windows downstairs that didn't open at all because they were trying to get the wasp out. They looked real, but they weren't real.
The wasps?
No, the windows.
Oh.
She said they were all fake windows, and she had never seen anything like that. It wasn't just that, oh, it's old. The paint had been, you know, like 15 mm-hmm. layers of paint, and so you just need to, like, scrape it off, whatever. No, this was like, it never was meant to open. And so she's like, well, that's fucking weird, but whatever. I mean, look, maybe it was the cheaper of the options, and this is what they could do when they built the house. Who knows?
I don't know if you said if they were renting or buying this house, but if they bought this house and that damn inspector gadget didn't catch that, I'd be so damn pissed.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
Like, you're just going on your merry way with your brand new house, and you're like, the freaking windows won't open, and the home inspector didn't catch that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure I paid you like $800 for this damn appraisal and inspection.
Right.
Motherfucker. I'm mad at somebody that doesn't even exist.
Now, the first night in the house, because the wasp, or, you know, they finally dispersed and they all got in the house. Cindy looked over, and for some reason, before, when they saw the house, it didn't click to her, but maybe because of all the weirdness that had gone on that day, when she looked over at the staircase, she said her stomach just dropped because that was the same staircase from her nightmare.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah. And I honestly, I'm like, it might have just been because it was dark and everything, and things look different in the light.
Mm-hmm.
So she's freaked out about that, but she's like, okay, I mean, maybe I'm like projecting onto this. Who knows? But then it was really hot in the house, and Glenn was trying to figure out how to fix the air conditioner. And Cindy was like, look, girls, just to cool down, go take a bath. Like, just go take a bath. Which, that would make me hot too, though. Like,
no, because that worked during Katrina. You go take like a relatively cool shower, because luckily,
I was gonna say, no, we had ice cold water. No,
see, our water heater was gas, and so we had hot water, so you could make it cold, like cool but not cold.
Yeah, no, it was fucking ice water, so no. But I was gonna say, I don't like that, because then I have to get dry after that. I need my hair dry, I need everything dry, and so that makes me sweat. But I know Tiffany used to do this, like during Katrina. She would put like a wet rag between her boobs
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And so like I would put that on my forehead and just like,
after she put it under her boobs.
No. That is what it sounded like. I mean, I would, but it'd probably be hot from then. But like just like on certain parts, like on my wrist yeah. or whatever. And that would cool me down. But I could not take a bath to cool me down. But doesn't matter if they wanted to or not, because they didn't. Few minutes later, Cindy heard the girls screaming from the bathroom because when they turned on the faucet, black water was like spurting out. Not just like a gush. It looked like, you know, when something's kind of clogged.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. But then all of a sudden, it came out of the sink, the tub. You know, it had everything that was just nasty water. Which all I can think about is the water from the Cecil Hotel when girl was in there mm-hmm. and they were like, the water's nasty. Anyway, so Cindy was like, all right, I'm just going to take them to my mom. Like, they need to get their bath. They need to do all the things. Like, we're just going to go there. While Glenn had to fix the air conditioning unit. So later, they got back. She was like, you know what? It's hot, but I got to do all the things. So she tried to do laundry, but guess what? The water turned all of her clothes like a grimy black color.
Ew.
Because she thought maybe it would, you know, it would all come out in the wash. Like, yeah, the water wasn't great, but like detergent would help, all the things. It didn't. So then she was like, okay, maybe it's a washer because that doesn't. Who knows? You know, you try to reason it away.
I was going
to
say, why would it be the washer when your kids literally couldn't take a bath because it was gross?
Right. But she was just like, okay. And also she might have been like, this old washer is nasty and other people have used it. And so she bought a new one. But the same thing happened. And then when she was at the end of her rope.
Wait, why would she just go buy a new washer when, again, the kids literally just then could not have taken a bath because the water was so gross? Like, why did she not go, oh, it's probably the water?
I don't know.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, I don't know. So she bought a new one. Same thing happened. And then when she's at the end of her rope, when she is like stressed beyond stressed, the black water just stopped. It was normal, which thank you. But also, right. What happened? Why did it change? Like,
I would have. Boop, 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 the city and been like, hey, can you come check my water?
Right. What if it's well water, though?
Oh, I'd look. Look. That shit stinks so bad. And I know that you can get filters and all of that. But that camp that Colby lived in before, like when we first got together and then we ended up selling, it was well water. And I literally, when we would spend the night there, would have to brush my teeth with bottled water because I would gag.
Well, you do gag anyway.
Yes, but it's like,
yeah, I don't like it.
I cannot do it.
No.
It smells like rotten eggs.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you didn't know that? Yeah, it smells like straight rotten fucking eggs.
Oh, no.
Yeah, told you. See, I'm not just being a snob. It stinks. But they do make filters. He just didn't have one.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he had one, but not two, or I don't know.
He needed something better. So a little bit of time went on, and weird shit just kept happening, which I feel like it's more of like the money pit house than anything. Mm-hmm. But after she had dropped the girls off with her mom, Cindy went back to the house and was like unpacking and just like, you know what? Now the girls are out of my hair. I can just put some music on, go to town, and get all this done. She opened a cabinet, and the door fell off. And then she tried to open another one. It fell off. And another. And all the cabinet doors were just dropping off. The light started dimming. And she said that it was like someone was slowly turning the brightness down on everything.
Like, what do you even do?
If that happened to me, I think I would just cry. I'm at that point of stress where I just want to cry.
I get that.
Even if the door didn't come off and it just did something, I would cry. But then all of them collapsing, no thank you. Now, another time she told the girls to go play downstairs. That was going to be their playroom. It was the cafe doors, which I always call them like the Western bar mm-hmm. doors, like the saloon doors.
Yeah.
I remember one time when we were looking for a house in high school that we went and like toured this house and it had one of those doors and I was like to the kitchen and I thought it would be so much fun because it was a lot of sitcoms I feel like had those growing up.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my gosh. But my mom was like, fuck no, I think it's nice. But now I'd be like, no.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to their saloon doors. Everything was fine. She could see them. They were playing, but then she noticed that the lights down there would dim really badly. And then Brooke came running out of her room and was like, Mom, I do not want to sleep in there. And Cindy was like, why? And she said that she just didn't like that room. But then Christy, instead of making fun of her sister, was like, yeah, no, I'm not sleeping in there either. Like, no, thank you. Let's go somewhere else.
And if your kids or agreeing on something, something is wrong.
Right? Glenn worked nights, and he would sleep in their room during the day. Because, again, it was, like, a little further away. So, kids are loud and all of that. So, when he needed sleep, he could be down there. And Cindy would sleep upstairs on the couch. And one night, she was starting to drift off, and she felt someone pull her eyelash.
What?
Yeah. Like, hard. So she woke up, looked around, and no one was there. She checked all the doors, didn't really have to check the windows because they weren't real. And everything that she checked was locked. So she laid back down, and then something punched her.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. in the stomach. And this started happening every night. Around midnight, she'd get hit, punched, kicked. I don't think they pulled her eyelashes anymore, but that sent me. But always when she was like in her sleep, she started to notice that when she would wake up, her eyes would go to one spot on the wall, like something, someone was watching her from there. Now, sometimes she'd be laying on the couch half asleep and she'd feel herself start to leave her body, like full on out of body experience. She said it felt like astral projection, which I know, Carrie, I haven't covered yet. I need to cover.
I didn't say a word.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have to. You've got me
conditioned.
Yeah. Yeah.
This also, I've got you conditioned why you don't finish your sentences, because I just fucking do it for you all the time, apparently. Yeah. I am literally on my own fucking nerves today.
So while she was out of her body, Cindy would get attacked. The main part that would hurt would be her lower back, and she had a ruptured disc there. And all she could do was just beg and pray for it to stop. And then she'd float back into her body. And when she was able to look up and like kind of gather her wits about her that like, okay, I'm up. No one was around. And when she told Glenn about this, he didn't believe her. He just rolled his eyes and was like, that doesn't even sound real. Like your back's hurting because it's got a ruptured disc. So you're like making this up in your head and like you're sleeping and this is what happens. So she went on living with that, not really sleeping because she'd get attacked. And she just kept feeling weird about the house. And Glenn kept not believing her. And one day she had begged him, please do not light the fireplace. It's something about it. Just don't. And he was like, you ain't gonna tell me what to do. Because he lit it. And then the electrician had come out to check on the lights because, again, she was like, they're dimming weird, like everything's so dark. And he told her someone had flipped their wiring around on purpose.
What?
Yeah. And he said that it creeped him out. He had never seen anything like that, which I don't know how it really worked like that, but I'm not an electrician. I don't even play one on the podcast. I can't even change a bulb.
Yes, you can. I mean, you can't reach, but I don't you know want how. To.
Well, Cindy was like, well, that kind of makes sense. And I don't understand what you're talking about kind of way. But the TV kept turning on by itself. It would get louder and louder. And the girls would like swear up and down that it wasn't them doing it. And he was like, hey, look, call me if anything else happens. But like everything's working, but something weird up in your house. And she said that it was like he was ready to get out of the house. And she's like secretly like, take me fucking with you. She said the phones didn't even work right either because every time she would try to call her mom, there'd be no dial tone. Because again, this is 1991, and so they're using a landline. And she said the minute she'd hang up, the phone would work again. And her mom had lupus and would get really sick every time that she came over to their house. And her cousin Angie would have like bad headaches when she would come in, and if she stayed for a little bit, she would just get so bad to where one time she collapsed on the floor crying. And it was like whatever was in the house didn't want Cindy to have anyone around to talk to. You know, because the moments that she wanted to call her mom, it was in the moments of frustration or being scared or, you know, just being at her wit's end. And then she couldn't even call. And then it got even worse because instead of just being inside the house and at night, it started getting physical outside. So one day she went to check on their puppy and it suddenly just would not move. And she said she felt a shift in the air and she got pushed so hard that she fell onto the ground. When she turned around, no one was there. And she said that she felt like the puppy had seen whatever that force was and like, so she's like, someone did do that. I didn't trip. I got pushed. Like, she wasn't Carrie that just tripped on a pebble.
True. But if something happens to this fucking puppy.
Oh, girl. Now, you know, people would come over, like I said, but they would start feeling bad and stuff. Her nephew who always stayed with her, like, just loved his Aunt Cindy, he came over, and the first time he was like, nope, not staying here, like, immediately was like, and no. Her niece stayed one night and said she couldn't sleep, and it felt like someone was watching her all night long. She was probably like, damn, my brother was right. And every night, like clockwork, Cindy would be out of her body, and it would get worse. She said it could hurt her more when she wasn't in her body. And I feel like maybe because she couldn't fight back then, like at least when she's in her body, like it's on her own like volition. When you're just a third party viewer, you have no ability to stop anything. She started hearing a man's voice during the out of body attacks, and he just kept repeating, it's evil. It's evil.
But like now you warn me?
Right? Like, yeah, I got it. I got it. The first night when it punched me in my stomach and fucking tugged on my eyelash, there was this one time that Glenn called her into the bedroom and he just didn't sound like himself. And she didn't know why, because, you know, sometimes you just know when someone's not feeling right. Like, I can call Carrie and she's like, what's wrong? Like, what are you thinking about? You know, something isn't right. And it is something like usually on my mind or whatever. And so when she walked in just to see, like, what's going on, he grabbed a pillow. And she's like, okay, what you doing? And about that time, he lunged at her and he tried to suffocate her.
What the fuck?
Right. She fought him off and took off to her mom's. And when she asked about it later, he acted like nothing had happened. And he's like, I don't even remember this. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so she was like, you know what? It didn't sound like him. Like, everything was weird. This house is weird. That wasn't Glenn then. She felt like something had taken him over. And when you didn't think it was going to get more strange, the girls had a neighbor boy that they would play with. His name was Sean. And one day, Christy ran inside crying. And when Cindy had asked her what was going on, she said that Sean had told her, I'm going to nail your mom to the wall at midnight.
Good Lord.
Right. So Cindy was like, oh, hold my sweet tea. Well, it's Illinois, so probably not sweet tea. Hold my iced tea. And she went and confronted Sean, and he admitted it. He said he didn't know why he said it, but he said it. But, you know, like, it was kind of like one of those kid moments, like, yeah, I said it. What? Like, no big deal. And, like, go on playing, like, fucking whatever kids play.
Minecraft.
Yeah.
No. Fortnite.
Yeah. Say something else so I can just say, yeah.
That's all I got. Ooh, Mario.
Yeah. Then another time they were all playing and he looked at Christy and said, I want to split your dad's head open.
My God.
Like, okay, I'd like to see you try, Sean. But they were like, this isn't the Sean I knew. Like, he was a sweet little kid and he just acted different. And before they would like mostly play outside, but now he insisted on coming in the house and playing. Well, one night, Cindy saw a little boy standing there, and he had on old-fashioned clothes, like a beanie cap, a vest, like shoes that I feel like kind of look like Mary Jane's, but like for guys. I don't know what those are.
Mary John's.
You got me on that. Oh, God. I'm going to use it. I'm never going to have an opportunity to use that. Besides, like, 5 years from now, and I'm going to say it, and everyone's going to be like, that was so dumb.
Like, the dumbest joke ever, and Donna laughed so hard.
That was good. It's just how you delivered it, too. Like, Mary John's. Anyway, he was staring at her, and she's staring at him, trying to be like, what the fuck? And he said he wanted her to follow him. And she was like, no, I'm not. But before she knew anything, she ended up falling asleep. So I feel like sometimes like the sleep protected her, but also not, because she was vulnerable in her sleep. But that was the only time she ever saw the little boy. But obviously that wasn't Sean in a getup. You know, that was a ghost that she had seen in the house. But it wasn't the only ghost, because there was a soldier. Now, Cindy thinks he appeared because Glenn had taken down the American flag that was outside the front of the house because it was really worn and stuff. And he was going to replace it, but never did. Like, that is totally me. Like, I'm going to do all this stuff and then, like, I take it down and then, oh, well, I forget. But, you know, a lot of people do have the American flag up, but they don't, like, take it down in the storms. They don't do all of that. And so it was pretty beat up. She said the soldier came out of the wall. He was wearing puffy white sleeves and black tall boots. Now, her uncle later told her that the house was built on what used to be Cannonball Hill, which was a burial ground for soldiers. So, makes sense that she might see a soldier after Glenn, her longtime boyfriend, not husband, took down the damn tattered flag. Another time, Cindy said that she saw an old woman in the bathroom mirror, and I'm like, girl, same. Do it every morning when I wake up, and I go, oh, Lord. But she said that she went to turn on the light to see, like, did I see what I think I saw? And it just kept turning itself off. And she said that she felt like someone was pulling the chain with her, because it was one of those, like, the pull chains, but, like, it was a heavier feeling, and it just felt like someone was also, like, holding her hand, grabbing it. Now, Cindy was tired. Cindy had seemingly been the one who was being attacked, like, all of the activity centered around her, and that was okay to her if the kids were okay. A true mama bear. Me, I'm like, I mean, you can mess with them for a night, okay? Like, I need some sleep. But then one night, Christy, one of the daughters, walked into her room, and she said that she had a weird look on her face. Like, Cindy said Christy had a weird look. And she said her voice just didn't sound like her. And Christy looked at her and said, I saw what you did, and I hate you.
What?
So Cindy was beyond flabbergasted. She said it was her daughter's body, but not her. Then she said that she called her grandmother because she was like, look, I need to trauma dump on you, and I got to tell you all about this stuff. And so she started telling her grandmother, and her grandmother said, you in danger, girl, basically, because she said, your house is possessed. Get those kids out now. And Cindy was like, you ain't gotta tell me twice, and did. So that morning, she got them ready for school. Like, nothing was wrong. But when she dropped them off, she broke down. Like, she had her little mentee bee. She couldn't even speak. And she moved into her mom's one-bedroom apartment, and she started sleeping with a Bible on her chest for months. Like, she wasn't super religious, but in those times, like, that's what gave her comfort. She said she called almost every church she could think of, and most of them turned her down. But then one priest finally agreed to help. She had to pass a psych eval first, and she did with flying colors. I'm like, damn, a psych eval? Like, I mean, I know, like, they usually talk to you and just make sure that you are of sound mind, but, like, just saying that, like, you had to undergo a psych eval for help from a priest?
Right. Well, I guess they just got to make sure that you are who you say you are and that you're maybe there for the right reasons.
Yeah. Around this time, Christy was trying to get all the help she could, and she went to a doctor because she just wasn't feeling good because, you know, she was getting beat up every frickin' night, and they ran some tests and everything, and she had blood in her urine. And she said that she really thinks it was due to being kicked repeatedly during the attacks because she would be kicked in the kidneys.
Damn.
And I'm like, hell, Carrie has blood in her urine all the time. I went to a new rheumatologist, and they had to do, like, their whole lab workup, and I had to do a urine sample. And I told the girls, I was like, fuck, I literally just peed before I came here. Because I was like, I don't want to have to pee really bad. Because I just feel like that makes my, like, my blood pressure go up or something. Because I'm nervous that I'm going to have to pee and I can't pee. And I wanted them not to have the cuff super fucking tight on me for it. Anyway, but I had to take a urine test and I was like, oh my God, I filled that sucker up because I asked the lady who was doing my blood. I was like, hey, you have one of those nurse hats, the toilet hats, the thing. And she was like, yeah, girl. And I was like, look, because I got short arms and a big belly. It makes it hard to collect the urine. And she said, oh, it doesn't matter what size you are. It's hard. And she was like, people come in here all shapes and sizes and ask for them. And then I guess she thought like I would be like embarrassed that I had to use it because like there were other people waiting at the lab, you know, to get their labs drawn. And she said, I'll meet you in the bathroom. And like went in and took it.
That's,
I was like, girl,
that's cute.
I know it was very nice, but I was like, there's no shame in my game. Cause I'd be like, if you don't have one of these, what are you doing with your life? It has changed the game for me. So just a call out there, if you are ever nervous about having to do that, if you're an extra large pizza, ask them for one of those little, I call it a nurse hat.
They are called a hat, not a nurse hat.
But I don't know why. You got one of those nurse hats back there? Oh, God. Okay. So she's got the priest. Her doctor's like, girl, your health is weird right now. And she's like, look, I'm fighting for my life. I'm fighting for my family. And I'm fighting for our dream home. The priest finally came over with another man who was a specialist from St. Louis. And they were going to bless the house. That was their first thing. So they did the whole thing with the holy water, the prayers, the whole shebang. But Cindy still didn't feel right about it. But she's like, you know what? I'm not going to be a negative Nancy. We're going to give it another try. But the very next day, Brooke got stuck on those fucking stairs, like physically stuck, like something had grabbed her. Cindy said that all she could do was just scream at it to let her go because she couldn't pull Brooke. Like she physically couldn't move her. What's she going to do? Dislocate her arm by trying to pull her? And later, Brooke and Glenn were sitting downstairs and something slammed the wall between them. And it was like the house went into turbo mode because the smells, it was like well water smells, the rotten eggs. They would hear voices. The furniture would move. The holy water would fling itself off of the wall. So they anointed the walls with it, but then they also put a little canister, I don't know, what do you call it? Like a vial of holy water on the wall. And it would just be like, and I oop, off the wall. Cindy started seeing other people, but not like actual people, like spirits. But it would just be random times, random people. And one guy had like blood on his forehead. And he looked at Cindy and said, it wants you to sacrifice yourself. And then he disappeared.
What the hell? Why do I got to sacrifice myself?
Right? Like, no, that's not what I'm going to do. So Cindy was like, you know what? Fuck this. She finally put the house up for sale. And all of this shit that I've told y'all, it only took 3 months.
Like, good Lord.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, we had to live there for years or whatever. 3 months was enough for her. And even after moving, Cindy said that she feels like it kept following her. And at one point, someone did a tea leaf reading and started screaming the name Daryl. And she said that Daryl had actually popped up in different ways before. And so Cindy was like, look, we are fucking getting out of this house. I don't know what's going to happen, but like, we're not going to stay here and find out. And so they eventually moved into a trailer. And she said that it felt like a fresh start, but she needed to go get all the stuff from the house. Like, they just literally found the first thing that was available because her mom had a one bedroom apartment. Like, they couldn't all stay there. And so that trailer was it, but she had to go and get curtains, laundry, all the stuff from the house. And she said that she would hear voices and it started was, it sounded like the Wasp again, really, because it sounded like hundreds of voices. And it was like they were surrounding her, and she ran out. And she was like, fuck, this house still isn't done with me. Now, Cindy has wrote a book called The Wall, because everything seemed to center around that fucking wall. And then remember, Sean was like, I'm going to pin her up to the wall. So she documented everything she went through. And the house is called like the House on the Hill. And a lot of people say it's cursed, or that it just wanted the family gone. So I don't know. Maybe Cindy had pissed it off somehow. But that is a story of Cindy Sorrow and the House on the Hill. If you want to watch more about her story, I watched something on YouTube. It was a documentary and she was being interviewed. I feel like Carrie would like that more because it was more of her own words. There's also an episode of A Haunting and it's called Dark Wrath. And you know, I love A Haunting. It's one of those just classic. It's like Unsolved Mysteries and stuff for me because it's just one of those classics. But of course, like in A Haunting, Glenn's name was something else, you know, like it changes the names or whatever.
Yeah.
So the documentary was more her telling the facts of what happened.
I know. Sometimes I'm like, why are you changing some of these details?
Mm-hmm. I know. Because it really will be some of the most asinine details.
Yes. And it's like, there's literally no point. Like, I could understand if it was like somebody that was a suspect that they ruled out. And so you don't want to use their name because why, like, keep dragging their name through the mud? Completely yeah. understand that. But if it's like, if it's nothing like that, there's literally no point.
So what do you have to say, Carrie, since this was someone retelling their story?
I say that I hope that she found the piece that she was looking for.
Do you believe the house was attacking her?
I believe that something was going on with her.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, I mean, who's to say it wasn't some...
I know, it is hard, but how stressed out we've been, I feel like when you put that energy out in the world, like, shit just happens and you're like, that makes you more stressed. Mm-hmm. And it just like, it feeds off of itself. And I feel like that might have been something with her.
Yeah. Well, and you know how fickle I am. It depends on what day you ask me. Because if you'd have asked me this tomorrow, I would be like, absolutely not. But today I'm like, well, how can you believe in one thing and not the other? It's like, how can you believe that, you know, people can go to a medium and tarot cards and all of that and then not believe this? So, but again, you ask me tomorrow and I'd be like, absolutely not.
Yeah. I will say, in that documentary, one of her daughters was sitting, like, I guess by the producer, so, like, off camera. And Cindy was, like, recalling a certain time. And her daughter was like, oh, my God, I totally had, like, blanked that out. Whatever you call it.
Blocked it out, yeah.
Yes. And she's like, no, I totally remember that now. Like,
yeah, well, because that's a trauma response, too, though, is, you know, blocking things out from your memory because you just can't handle it.
Yeah.
Okay, so for my story this week, I want to do a little shouty shout out to this one article on Medium that someone by the name of Chelsea Queen wrote, because they did such a good job putting this, like, they had so much background information on people that I didn't really see anywhere else, but there was also some stuff in People and Investigation Discovery. This is a pretty big case that there were quite a few different shows about. This is the story of Shanda Shearer. So Shanda was born June 6th of 1979 in Kentucky. She had two parents, obviously, but they got divorced when she was pretty young, but she was still, it seemed very close to both her mom and her dad. Well, she went to school in Kentucky, and while she was in school, she did a really great job. She had good grades. She had good friends. She was good at sports, but in 1991, her mom got another divorce. And so then they moved to Indiana, and then that's when Shanda enrolled in Hazelwood Middle School. Because at the time of this story, Shanda is 12 years old. Now, when she started going to this middle school, it was a lot bigger, but she was able to, like, find her footing pretty fast. But it didn't come without issues. While she was doing, like, volleyball and cheerleading, She did encounter one bully named Amanda Heverin. Not sure if I'm saying her last name right. But Amanda was not super nice to her. And one day they got in like a fight. And so it made them both have to go to detention. Well, while in detention, Shanda and Amanda started actually being friends. Like the whole Breakfast Club of it all, they actually started becoming friends. And this actually later turned into like they became girlfriends. They had like a romantic relationship. Well, in October of 1991, Amanda and Shanda go to a school dance. Sidebar, could you imagine if a lesbian couple had gone to a dance in 1991? Like, what pioneers?
For real. Also, weird that you're doing a 1991 story, and I did too.
I didn't even put that together. But here's the thing. Amanda had actually just gotten out of a relationship with a girl named Melinda Lovelace. Insert a Lovelace joke here. So here, this is what is weird to me, though. Okay, Amanda was only like 13 or 14, and Shanda was 12, but Melinda was 16.
Yeah, that's weird.
This feels icky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, she could have been like one grade more than them. Like if she would have gotten held back,
yeah,
you know, 1 year, then she may have just been like in the same grade or one grade ahead of Amanda. But I just feel like Shanda was 4 years younger than her. Like, I don't know. This
and
just
at that age, those
right,
like
those big age differences.
Yes. Just think about like kids, because it's like, ugh, I don't want to hang out with my niece who's 12 and mm-hmm. I'm 16. Like, she's into stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
she's in middle school. You're driving.
Yeah.
Like, she's not even a teenager yet, and you have your driver's license. Like, it's just, it's that's a huge age gap at this age.
Right.
Well, Melinda was pissed when she saw Shanda and Amanda show up to the dance. And so she actually almost fought Shanda. Just know there are a ton of names in this story, so stick with me. Well, Amanda actually stopped the fight between Shanda and Melinda because it's fucking dumb. Like, why are we fighting over something like this at a fucking school dance? We just had attention. That's how we got together, kind of thing. Melinda was still really pissed, and she was threatening Shanda. She'd even sent letters to Amanda saying that she wanted to kill Shanda. Well, Shanda's mom was like, fuck this. You're not going to that school anymore because you already got in a fight with Amanda. Now she's your girlfriend, but now you're getting fights with this Melinda person because she's mad that you're with Amanda. We're not doing this shit. And so her mom actually got her into a different school called Our Lady of Perpetual Help. Because here's the thing, Shanda's grades and stuff were actually going into the toilet too. Like, she was not only having issues with Melinda and kind of figuring this out, her grades weren't doing so good. She wasn't doing so great, just period. Like, she was just getting into trouble. And so this transfer to this other school actually really helped her.
I'm always shocked and like in awe of people who can be going through all of that stress and turmoil and all of that and have still like really good grades and all
right.
of that. Because that ain't me.
Well, not Shanda either. And so when her mom changed her schools, she started doing a lot better. Now that Shanda's out of the picture, you think that Melinda would have kind of chilled out a little bit, but she didn't. And she starts being like, no, I don't care that Amanda and Shanda aren't together anymore. I'm still pissed at her for dating, you know, my ex-girlfriend. And so she starts like really going in on Shanda, like making plans to hurt her. So let's talk a little bit about Melinda. Now, this is where I told y'all that Medium article came in really clutch because she had so much background, so check her out. But okay, so Melinda, like I said, she was 16 years old, and she was known to be very like volatile and clearly violent because she was already trying to start fights with Shanda, knowing that that wasn't her first fight either. Because if that's like your go-to, like, I'm gonna fight you, it ain't your first fight. So, okay, her parents were pretty fucking terrible. So her dad was very violent, like physically, sexually, he's the worst. And apparently he would wear Melinda's underwear and then like also forced his wife into swinging. and allegedly even like set it up to where his wife, Melinda's mom, was gang raped.
Oh, fuck.
Right. And then he himself would rape his wife when she told him no. But here's the thing. When her dad, his name was Larry, when Larry raped her mom, Marjorie, the kids heard it.
Fuck. Well, no wonder she's like...
Exactly.
Who she is.
But he also would kind of do some of the same things to them because he would make them like sleep in the bed with him. And a cousin had actually reported that they had seen him raping the girls.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so then in 1980, Melinda's parents decide that it's time to change their lives and they're going to quit, you know, doing all the things, and they went to church. But it wasn't long before Larry went back to being Larry and they were kicked out of the church because he was trying to get a little too close to the women in the church and was even attempted to rape one.
What the fuck?
Here's the thing, too, though. When they were doing the whole church thing, Melinda had to go through a 5-hour exorcism.
What the fuck?
Yep. And it was like, it just says, like, by this 50-year-old man in a motel. So you know that shit was sketchy as fuck.
Yeah.
Once Melinda hit 14, the dad ditched everybody and left. So you can see where Melinda's rage and anger, and even though that's the same thing, and just like all of her issues stem from. And she's 16. Like, she doesn't know how to fucking process that shit.
Hell, I'm 40 and I don't.
So there are a couple other people involved in this story. So now we're going to talk about Laurie Tackett. So she was a friend of Melinda's. And she grew up in a very strict Pentecostal house, but like strict to the point that one time her mom found out that she was changing out of her skirt and putting jeans on when she went to school, and her mom strangled her.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Did you ever do that? Like where you hid what you were wearing?
No, I was fat. I was lucky to have clothes that fit me back then.
Same. I was about to say the same
If I could go to school in pants that didn't have pleats, I was winning.
I was going to say, there's nothing that I could change into that wasn't matronly anyway. Right. So, yeah.
No, I looked like I was about to go on a ladies' trip to visit Noah's Ark and fucking, you know what I mean? Like, no, I didn't change into shit.
No, me either.
Sidebar, that's actually a trip my mom took with her little church. Laurie had a hard time dealing with the stuff that she grew up with, too, and she would self-harm. But then also she would, like, pretend that she was possessed. So, again, there's a lot happening with this group of girls. Then there was Hope Rippey. Hope had a pretty normal upbringing, much like Shanda. And so she had low self-esteem, but, I mean, who the fuck doesn't? So Hope went to school with all of them, but then when her parents got divorced, they moved to Michigan. But then her parents got back together, so she moved back, and that's when she became friends with Laurie and Toni Lawrence. So Toni Lawrence was a girl who was a real good friend of Hope. Now, Toni had her own issues because she was also sexually assaulted by a family member when she was 9 and then was raped by a boy close to her age when she was 14.
What the actual fuck?
So there is literally, like, you could do entire episodes of, like, the things that these young girls have gone through is just fucking horrible. But it seems like Shanda was going to the other school, wasn't having anything to do with Amanda, certainly not having anything to do with Melinda, but that wasn't good enough for Melinda. So on January 10th of 1992, Melinda decides that that is her night. So Melinda, Laurie, Hope, and Toni all are hanging out. They were supposed to go to a concert. And on the way, it's Laurie, Hope, and Toni. So Hope and Toni didn't even know Melinda until this night. So Laurie's kind of the one that puts everybody together. So they go and pick each other up, and they're going to go to this concert. Well, when they pick Melinda up, Melinda's like, you told them the plan? And they're like, what are you talking about? And she says, we're going to kill a little girl tonight.
Oh, my God.
And then she had a knife with her, like a kitchen knife, not like a pocket knife. She tells them, Melinda being she, tells them that, I don't know if she says just kidding, but basically, I just want to scare her. I just want to scare her because she stole my girlfriend, Amanda, and so we're just going to scare her.
That's what they all say. I'm just going to scare her.
So they call Shanda, and they tell her that Amanda wants to meet her. Well, Shanda's staying with her dad, and so they go to pick her up, and she sneaks out of her dad's house. But see, Shanda doesn't know that Melinda is in the car because she ain't gonna fucking go if she sees Melinda in there, because she's gonna know something bad's about to happen, because last time she saw Melinda, Melinda's wanting to beat her up. So they tell Shanda that Amanda is waiting for her at this place. It's like this abandoned building called the Witch's Castle that I think maybe they would like hang out at. Shanda sneaks out, and little does she know that Melinda is actually hiding in the car. Now, I saw a couple of things where like Melinda was hiding in the back, and then Shanda kind of realized what was going on then. But then some stuff made it seem like they drove her to the abandoned house, and that's when shit goes down. So they force Shanda inside to this house, and Laurie and Melinda tie her legs and wrists. And they tell her, like, you know, they're just like trying to scare her, like, oh, this place has got all these dead bodies in it. Like, you're going to be one of them too, you know, blah, 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 blah. Laurie even burns a t-shirt and tells Shanda that she's going to burn next. Like, they're just doing everything that they can to torture and scare her. Well, then they're like, oh, fuck, what if somebody actually sees this fire? Then they're going to know we're here. So they take Shanda back to the car, and they start driving around to look for a gas station. These dumbasses, they're so fucking young and dumb. They get lost a couple of times. I mean, granted, it's 1991, so it's not like they can just use Waze, but they do get lost a couple of times. And they literally stopped and asked for directions. And when they do that, literally Shanda is in the back being like held captive and covered by a blanket. So they get to this other abandoned building, because apparently there's a lot of abandoned buildings just hanging out around for these girls for their fucking ridiculousness. And when they get there, Laurie and Melinda, who seem to be kind of the ringleaders, take Shanda inside. Now, Tony and Hope stay in the car because they're like, this shit is getting too serious. Like, I don't really want a part of this.
It was all serious when you lure someone out of their house under false pretenses, knowing that you're going to hurt them.
Right. And then, like, to know, too, that she had a knife, I get it that they didn't, like, they're like, you know, they don't think it's going to go the way we know it, the story is going to go. But you know it's bad. And you know that you shouldn't take someone out to a fucking place in the woods to scare them. Like, you know that that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, just leave or report it. Or, like, even if you're not going to report it, just fucking leave, you know?
Yeah.
Once inside this other house, Laurie and Melinda make Shanda take her clothes off except for her underwear. And Melinda starts to beat her up, like, just hitting her over and over and over again. And then she slams Shanda's head into her knees. And, oh, God, this just tells you how young she is. Shanda has braces, and her braces, like, tear her lips and her tongue.
Oh,
and it's like,
fuck.
That sounds so fucking painful. But, like, again, it just shows you how young Shanda is.
Meanwhile, you had a
you crisis know what?
And you're an adult. But I do get what you're talking about.
So remember they had that knife. At this point, Melinda tries to cut Shanda's throat, but she couldn't because the knife wasn't sharp enough. Now, I don't know what got into Hope, but I don't know if she just wanted to see what was going on. But that's when she comes in, and she actually holds Shanda down while Laurie and Melinda are stabbing her.
Like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah, like, why did you get the fuck out of the car? Like, why? Let's just back that train way up. Why is this happening? Period. But, like, you know what's going on. Like, why did you get the fuck out of the car? Unless you were going to stop it.
Right.
So they're stabbing her repeatedly. And then Laurie starts to strangle her with rope. So at this point, the girls think that Shanda's dead, but she's not. So they take her and they put her in the trunk of the car and they start to drive back to Laurie's house. But on the way, Shanda starts screaming. So they stop the car. Laurie gets out and stabs Shanda over and over and over again.
Like, what the actual fuck? It's like y'all had a chance. Like, y'all fucking tried to kill her. She's still alive. She might not even make it to the hospital, but you have a chance to save her.
Girl, this gets so much worse. Just get ready. So at this point, they're like, she's dead. And so they go back to Lori's house. They just have themselves a little fucking snack. And then they're like, oh, we should go on another joyride. And so they do with Shanda's body in the fucking trunk. But while they're on their joyride, they're like, maybe we should just stop and just look at her because, like, we need to see what we did because we're so cool. Well, when they stop, they open the trunk and Shanda is fucking alive. She sits up, but she is fighting for her life. But I think it's more like survival instinct because it says, like, she, like, is kind of gargling. Her eyes are kind of rolling. And so I think that, like, she was still alive, but I think that she probably had a lot of brain damage and stuff.
Right.
But.
Which is so fucking sad.
Then Laurie uses a tire iron to beat her.
Like, how can you be this mean? Like, this fucking physically mean?
Well, and I'm like, Laurie, what the fuck? Like, this is Melinda's fight. Like, why are you doing all of this? So after Laurie and Melinda had, like, beaten her with the tire iron, they go back to tell Hope and Tony, like, what all had happened. Like, they wanted to show them the body. And Tony was like, no, like, I won't, like, no, I don't even want to, like, look at her. And,
like, how could you?
I don't know.
You know, like, if someone's like, hey, come here, look at this. I cannot even fathom how you process that.
Well, you know what Hope does? She sprays Windex on Shanda and says, you're not looking so hot now, are you?
What the actual fuck?
This is literally one of the worst stories we've ever done. Well, now they're like, okay, well, what do we do? So they have to get rid of the body. So they go to a gas station and they get some drinks and gas. Then they go to this area that's pretty deserted and they take Shanda's body out of the car and Laurie tells Hope to pour the gasoline on Shanda. And then Laurie sets her on fire. After that, they leave. But then Melinda's like, wait, what if it, like, dies out too fast? Like, what do we do? And so they go back and Melinda pours the rest of the gasoline out onto Shanda. After all of this happened, you want to know what they did? They fucking went to McDonald's.
How can you eat after you did, like, a brutal fucking murder?
Well, Melinda is so proud of what she did. She tells Amanda, and Amanda's like, there ain't no fucking way. Like, Amanda doesn't believe her. And then Melinda shows her, like, the blood in the car and all of that. And then Melinda's like, okay, but now you can't say anything. But here's the thing. Tony, she was the weakest link, which, thank God, like, go Tony. She was like, I can't fucking do this. And she told her parents, and then they went to the police. Well, the next day, on January 11th, there were some hunters out, and they found Shanda's body, which, of course, they thought it was a mannequin, because everybody does. When the police first got there, they thought this had to be, like, drug-related because of the fact that the body was burned. Like, they were like, this is a statement. Like, they really thought that this was a gang or some sort of drug deal gone bad.
Because it's overkill.
Yeah, but it's like, no, this is a statement showing, like, if you do this to me, I'm going to do this to you kind of thing. But it wasn't until later that they found out that it was actually Shanda and that it wasn't tied to drugs or a gang. Shanda's cause of death was smoke inhalation.
So she was still alive when she was burned to death. Oh, my God.
So all of those things that they did to her, she still survived. And at any point, they could have ended this. And it not been what it was, but I cannot imagine. Like, Shanda survived 4 different sets of attacks with different objects and people, and she died from smoke inhalation and being burned. Like, I can't, like, the fact that she was living at that point is just like, fuck these girls.
Right.
All 4 of the girls were charged as adults. Because of that, they were eligible for the death penalty. But all of the girls took plea deals, thank God, so that Shanda's poor family did not have to go through this trial. Meanwhile, though, her mom did find out her cause of death on the fucking news. But Laurie, Hope, and Melinda all pled guilty to murder, arson, and criminal confinement. So Tony pleaded guilty to 1 count of criminal confinement, and she got 20 years in prison because she really was the one that was like, I want no part of this. But she does also have to pay for her part in this.
Right, right.
Because you could have left, or you could have like tried to shut it down or whatever. But Tony was so upset about this that she, I think, tried to die by suicide. She had an overdose while she was waiting to be sentenced. And she like was in the hospital for a long time because of this. But she only served 9 years. So Laurie and Melinda both got 60 years. And now Hope got 60 years, but then she appealed and then it got taken down to 35. And she was actually released in April of 2006. They tried to get Laurie and Melinda off like with shorter sentences because of like their childhood.
This is what sucks is that, yes, they had a terrible childhood, but that doesn't negate what they did and how brutally they murdered her.
Melinda was released from prison in September of 2019, and Laurie was released from prison on the 26th anniversary of Shanda's death on January 17th of 2018.
What the actual fuck?
Now, it seems like Melinda really kind of turned her life around while she was in prison. She became really into the Indiana Canine Assistance dogs to train dogs. And like Shanda's mom, who is like legitimately an angel upon all angels, found out about Melinda's involvement training like the service dogs. And she actually like donated a dog to this in Shanda's honor, like for like, I think specifically for Melinda to train, but I could be wrong on that part. I may not have understood that correctly, but Melinda, I know Melinda helped train it, but I don't know if it was like specifically for yeah. her. And like, she's really chosen forgiveness and, you know, trying to just do the best she can.
There ain't no way I could.
No. Now, Shanda's dad had a really hard time coping and he died at the age of 53. So that is the literal, one of the worst cases we've ever covered of this brutal murder of this poor, poor 12-year-old girl.
So the story sounded kind of familiar, but when something is so brutal like that, it doesn't matter if you've heard it 1,000 times, it's still so shocking and upsetting. I think I watched it on Mean Girl Murders.
Okay. Wait, that may be where I've heard it too. Because I kept going like, I know I've heard this before. Because sometimes I ask ChatGPT, like, what are some good cases to cover? And this is one of the ones that ChatGPT recommended. So that's actually how I decided to cover this case. But I wonder, because y'all know I've been catching up on I Think Not, and they did that show. And I'm wondering if it was one of the ones they covered. Because y'all know Karen, who's awesome, she has created a Google spreadsheet thing of all of our episodes. So like I kept searching that. I kept looking in Apple Podcasts going, I feel like I have done this story. Like how do I, like I know this story, but like I even told Donna when we first started recording, I was like, I feel like I've done this one, but I can't find it. So here we go. But maybe that, now that you say Mean Girl Murders, I bet that's why.
Yeah.
Dang, ChatGPT did me dirty.
Her story definitely deserves to be heard.
Because I just feel like we need to shine a light on, you could have stopped that at any point. Like, I get that those girls went through more in their childhood in just a minimum amount of years than most adults go through in their entire life. Those poor babies, when they were young, went through hell and back. And I don't want to minimize that. But that doesn't give you the right to take someone else's life and to brutally beat them and murder them.
Right.
And then, you know, again, I get peer pressure and I get being wrapped up in the moment and all of that. But if we had gotten in a car with someone and we went and picked someone up and they said, did you tell them what we're doing tonight? We're going to kill someone. I would be like, fuck no. Drop me off at my house. I ain't going for that shit.
I would have got out at that person's fucking house.
Yes.
And been like, knock, knock, knock. They said they're going to kill right? someone.
Right. I would have, boop, boop, boop. Police. So I was just in a car with these people. And they said this. You probably should go check on this person. Fuck that. But again, I keep saying I don't want to minimize, but I also don't want to minimize the effects of peer pressure and the fact that
absolutely
you can get wrapped up in the moment and all
and
that.
And also, Melinda had a knife. So she's like, hey, we're going to kill that girl. And she's got a fucking knife. And it's like, okay, well, I don't want to be next.
Right.
You know, I don't want to go against
That's
her.
That's a great point. Yeah. It's so easy to say when I'm in 2025 sitting here saying if this happened to a kid today, they could just like text their mom and be like, or their anybody and say, hey, I need help, you know?
Yeah. Drop a pin and
say,
here
this,
it is.
Yeah, here we are. SOS on Life 360. Like, I need help, mom, dad, aunt, uncle, grandma, somebody come help me.
Right. Oh, that just breaks my heart. And over nothing. Nothing. Like, y'all have your whole lives ahead of you. But also, like, Melinda, this was premeditated. And you don't bring a weapon if you don't intend to use it.
Absolutely. Because they weren't just trying to scare her. You could have done all of that with, like, your fucking hands. You know what I mean? Like, you knew what you were doing. You were literally bringing a knife to kill her. Because it seems like she had said multiple times that she did want to kill her.
Also, just taking her somewhere and popping up and being like a fucking Jack in the Box, like, bitch, I'm here. That would have scared her, okay? Putting her out in the forest or wherever the witch's tit was, that would have scared her. You didn't have to do anything, you know? Like, you had her vulnerable. She trusted you. And then, you know, like, that's enough.
Yes. And she was out of the fucking picture. She didn't even go to that school anymore. Like, she had nothing to do with Amanda. Like, it was over. Like, move on. Like, it was over.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. In, like, 1991, when you moved schools, it really was over. Like, y'all.
Fuck yeah. We didn't have circle dialing.
No. And, like, you don't have Facebook. You don't have the social media part to, like, still be like, I'm going to like all her pictures. I'm going
right.
to watch. Like, no. It's like, oh. Yeah, it's people that I used to go to that school. Like,
exactly.
It was
like,
so
unless you're
separate.
Yes, unless you're fucking snail mailing or like it ain't happening.
Right. That's why, like, if someone left school, it was so sad because you're like, I'm never going to see them again.
Right. ChatGPT had us doing a hard one at the end.
Well, also, you knew you were going last. Why'd you do that?
I know. I didn't actually. I actually thought I went first this week.
God dang. Also, it was a violent episode. Cindy got beat up.
It was very, very gruesome. My story was very gruesome.
It really was. That's what I'm saying. Like, because I was like, God, that name sounds familiar. But then when you said McDonald's, I was like, I remember that. Because I was like, how are these girls going to eat and like giggle? Mm-hmm. And I think someone even said something, like mentioned something about like the food and her. And stuff. And it's like, wait, how do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh.
Well, also, again, a little shout out to Chelsea Queen on Medium because her article was so good to help me kind of like put the pieces together and like with had such good background on the girls and all of that. So,
yeah. Because I don't think on the Mean Girl Murders that it went that,
no, that
deep
was the,
into
yeah,
it.
Yeah. That was the only place I saw that on.
Yeah. But also, I know I say this all the time, but how do people find each other? Like, the people who will instigate stuff and, like, be the hype girl in the bad way.
Uh-huh.
How do they find each other? It's like this whole group of girls, and Laurie's the one who was like, oh, yeah, they'll probably be into it. Or, what? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't even fucking know Melinda. Why would you kill someone?
Like, this is not your battle. This is not your fight. Like, stay the fuck out of it.
Yeah, and you're not, not that, like, violence is ever the answer, but you're not beating her up. You're not doing anything. You're not spray painting her fucking car. One, she wasn't old enough to fucking drive.
But she wasn't, you know, old enough to get into a PG-13 movie.
No. And it's like, but you, if someone said, hey, we're not going to the concert, we're going to kill someone.
First of all, have I already paid for a ticket? Because, bitch.
Oh, for real.
But second of all, you know, all those other things that we've said.
Yeah. Well, to end on a high note, let's talk about the high seas, because we're going
on a cruise.
Yes, we are, in November. We would love for you to be a part of that, because I can't even wrap my head around saying we had a show in New Orleans.
Now we're going to say we had a show in the Bahamas?
The Bahamas.
Well, we'll be on the ship that day, so maybe we'll just have to, like, put a pin in the ocean to where we were. At latitude and longitude 13475.
We were international.
Yes.
Then we get back and we're like, okay, we were right here. Oh, we were
in still Florida. In America waters.
We were in Florida. Never mind.
Well, if y'all want to get in on the cruise, they are selling out fast. It's not just us. It is other podcasters, great podcasters that you're going to want to check out. So head to crimewaveatsea.com/creep, where you can put in your information to get your fan code and check out all the rooms and everything that's available. Also, don't forget to check us out on Patreon. There is an extra episode a week that comes out. So there are a literal ton. Okay, not literal. But probably 350 fucking episodes on Patreon. So head on over there to check that out. Different tiers, different options. But more importantly, don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.